The elections on Sunday saw the CDU lose the absolute majority it had held in Baden-Württemberg for more than 20 years, but it is still the strongest party in the state. The European Commission has decided to impose import limits and a 20% protective tariff on bananas from Latin America. Bananas from Latin America are considerably cheaper than bananas from European community producers such as Crete and the Canary Islands. Consumers in Germany, who eat the most bananas in Europe, will soon be paying more. And now to end the news, a glance at the major points once again. The European Parliament in Strasbourg has endorsed the Maastricht Treaty on European political and economic unity, at the same time criticizing it for not going far enough towards political unity. Germany has announced that it will be reviewing its development aid to Peru following the dissolution of that country's parliament. Germany's Environment Minister Klaus Töpfer is on his way to Japan and China. That's the end of the news. In the next 40 minutes, we'll be presenting European Journal.
Over the rolling hills of northern England.
My name was on the board for a flight, so I got ready and planned the flight. Nothing was really out of the ordinary. It was just another day on that squadron. The flight went according to plan until something went wrong.
About 45 minutes into the sortie, we were heading for home. Kate actually was flying the aircraft. I'd given her control under my close supervision. And we were flying straight and low at 420 knots, which is about 470 miles an hour, at 250 feet, which is our authorised level practice flight. And when all of a sudden a bird struck the canopy just to the right of my head, into the canopy, and I was taken out by probably a large piece of perspex from the canopy itself, which hit me in the face. And quite simply felt like being hit in the face by a sledgehammer, and it knocked me out at the time.
There was a bright light, and I knew there was something wrong, but I didn't know what. Actually, the front canopy had been shattered, but I wasn't to know that, because Harry has two canopies and one had stayed intact.
Well, I found myself slumped on my left knee, and I realised that my oxygen mask had been ripped from my face. My visor was missing as well, and I noticed that my helmet was half off my face. I couldn't feel the front of my face at all, and I had a mouthful of teeth.
I started screaming at the pilot, not knowing what was happening, but sure there was something wrong.
I just remember Kate screaming. She'd obviously let go of the controls. I, at that time, could not see either. Probably threw myself in a conscious state. And I elected to eject.
And the next thing I saw was the pilot ejecting. And I followed him, pulled my handle, and so went.
It's a very violent experience. You could sit like about 25G full. It hurts quite simply. It's like a big kick at the bottom. There's a lot of tumbling sensation, a lot of buffeting.
Tomorrow, over the same wavelengths, we wish all our listeners a very good evening.
Diane's box. So that we have always had a gladiatorial class in this country. And we've always seen our athletes as professionals and as entertainers.
And so today's gladiators are the slam-dunking basketball player and the home-run-hitting baseball player. There for your watching enjoyment.
Well, I believe we are worth it because I look at Mr. Crawford, who I've seen so many times in Phantom of the Opera. I don't know what he gets paid, but I know he gets paid a lot of money, too, for doing what he does. But I think it's just supply and demand, what people want to see and what they'll pay to see. Then that, you know, that's the determination of how much you're going to get paid. So I welcome anyone else if they want to get into this line of work. Give it a try. But you do get paid well, but it's a lot of sacrifices, too.
But just think of all the taxes they'll have to pay. Which brings me very nicely to our final subject today. The worlds of pop and politics overlapped on Monday night in London when former Beatle George Harrison took to the stage in his first live concert in Britain for decades, and Tax Man was one of the Beatles' songs he performed. His was not so much a concert, really, more an election rally to drum up support for Britain's most recent electoral contenders in a run-up to polling day on Thursday. For Outlook, Isabel Wolf was in the audience.
It's nearly 30 years since George Harrison appeared at the Albert Hall, then with the Beatles. But Monday night's performance had less to do with nostalgia than with politics. George Harrison's 1966 hit, Tax Man, seems an appropriate song for an election campaign in which taxation has been at the top of the agenda. But he wasn't singing for the Conservatives, Labour, or the Liberal Democrats, but for the Natural Law Party.
Natural Law Party. Dr. Geoffrey Kennings, party leader.
It's time to bring the light of science into politics. It's time to use the scientific knowledge of natural law to create a government that can satisfy everyone.
The Natural Law Party appeared for the first time on March the 15th, only a couple of days after the date of the general election was first announced. It's the political wing of the Transcendental Movement, led by the 80-something Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, an Indian mystic whom the Beatles used to follow in the 1960s. The Natural Law Party says it aims to beautify Britain and to satisfy, through sound scientific principles, the needs and aspirations of the entire nation. In fact, their intention is to bring about nothing less than heaven on earth. Their leader is Dr. Geoffrey Clements.
Natural law is the universal nourishing intelligence at the basis of everything in the universe and at the basis of human life. And our programs strike to the root of natural law, to nourish life from its basis, and that is why our programs are successful in nourishing every aspect of life.
It all sounds very vague and mystical, but the NLP have more concrete ideas in mind too. Lowering taxes to between 10 and 20%, phasing out value-added tax, and establishing herbal gardens in every town and village to help create a disease-free society. Cynics say it's all a con, just an elaborate stunt to draw attention to transcendental meditation, which can be studied at a price on specialist courses. But, says George Harrison, it really isn't a gimmick.
This is a real party who can actually do real things. And as far as I'm concerned, just as in Eastern Europe and Russia, the way communism, it just wore itself out. It was no longer applicable. And that's what I think of politics in Britain, in all of Europe and America as well, for that matter, is that it's tired and they need to break the mold and start fresh. You know, Labour, Liberal and Conservative have shown what they've been able to do for the last couple of hundred years, and it hasn't been very good.
The Natural Law Party seems to attract professional people from medicine, from journalism and from law. As George Harrison sees it, the NLP are going to do well because people are looking for new political values in the 1990s.
What we need is to put a bit of consciousness into the people, you know. I mean, they need to be able to draw on their inner strength and tune into the ocean of awareness. What we need is some God consciousness in government, and sooner the better.
Whatever one thinks of the Natural Law Party and their policies, Monday night's concerts certainly enlivened the final few days before the British general election. And according to Beatles biographer Richard Buskin, it's given George Harrison's career a boost too.
This is, after George Harrison, one of the Beatles, the biggest act in the history of rock music. The man sounding in absolutely fantastic form, the voice sounds superb, it sounds fresh. And then politically, we're going into, I think, more spiritual cults. And I think this really could be his moment.
The concert was arranged so fast, in just 6 days in fact, that there wasn't even time to print posters. But even so, the Albert Hall was absolutely packed, and George's fans just raised the roof. But whether any of them will vote for the Natural Law Party is an entirely different matter.
It's Mel Wolfe reporting there that power wasn't enough. George Harrison wants political power for the transcendental vote. Well, I'm off now, so until the same time tomorrow, peace and goodbye.
Harrison, my sweet lord. Coming next, Fear from the Book, a series which examines some famous books which have the power to scare. Then at 01:45, that's in a quarter of an hour's time, on the country style menu, we have a brand new recording of that classic train song, Canadian Pacific, by the star who had the original hit with it almost 25 years ago.
Taken away from a constellation which symbolizes Satan and placed in Ursa Minor, which, like cancer, symbolizes the sheepfold as the stronghold of the saved, where God's people await Christ's finished work. Now, Ursa Minor is widely known as the Little Bear, and paired with Ursa Major, the Great Bear. They're also known as the Big and Little Dippers, though this is very modern. The idea of the bears goes no further back than the Greeks. Remember that. You got to go way back behind to get the meanings that are original. The bear symbol does not appear at all in the old zodiacs of Chaldea, Persia, Egypt, or India. Thus, we must look elsewhere for the original meaning. Many people have noticed that the bears in these two star groups, as drawn in pictures, have enormous raised tails, which is uncharacteristic of bears. The bear idea seems to have come from a confusion of words. An old Persian word for bear is very similar to the word for sheepfold. And as Bullinger will point it out more thoroughly, the Greeks appear to have mistaken one word for the other, according to Bullinger. Well, let's see what Bullinger has to say. In Hebrew, there is a word very similar in sound, though not in spelling, which means a bear. So we find, if they can zoom in close enough, you'll see the Hebrew characters. In the Hebrew, there's a word very similar in sound, though not in spelling, which means a bear. So we find in Arabic, and you'll see the two words you...
Top leaders, including the group's military commander. The memoir actually evidence that, apparently, both sides of the Franco-Spanish border. With Expo 92 due to open in Seville on April 20th, and the Olympic Games in Barcelona later this year, the Spanish authorities are taking no chances. In recent months, it has stepped up its 23-year-old guerrilla campaign against the Spanish government and has threatened to disrupt this year's event. From Madrid, Maggie A. looks at the tip the organization posted. In the run-up,
They shun danger and are greedy for profit. While you treat them well, they are yours. They would shed their blood for you, risk their property, their lives, their children, so long, as I said above, as danger is remote. But when you are in danger, they turn against you.
The 16th century, the century of the prince, was the century of Martin Luther and the rebellion of the Protestants against the Roman Catholic Church. There was bitter religious strife in Europe.
All over Europe, men were thinking much more about the importance of the religious life being congruent with the political life. So when they read in Machiavelli, and particularly in his short, readable and memorable book, The Prince, that this was not the way the world had worked, did work, or could work, then the revulsion from Machiavelli was all the stronger for developments in the religious life of Europe.
The prince was attacked both by the Roman Catholic Church, put on the index of banned books, in fact, and also attacked by the Protestants as an example of what wicked Catholics were up to.
As a political figure, Machiavelli was identified by each side, Protestant and Catholic, with what they hated about the other. For instance, the massacre of the Huguenots on St. Bartholomew's Day in France, Protestants, in 1572, was seen by other Protestants as being a Machiavellian act, and he was identified with this massacre, although, of course, he had nothing to do with it, and his works, no doubt, had nothing to do with it.
The English 16th century dramatist Christopher Marlowe, a Protestant, wrote a play about this massacre. And Marlowe begins another of his plays, The Jew of Malta, by bringing Machiavelli on stage in person.
To some, perhaps, my name is odious, but let them know that I am Machiavelli, and weigh not men, and therefore not men's words. Admired I am of those that hate me most. I count religion but a childish toy, and hold there is no sin but ignorance. Many will talk of title to a crown. What right had Caesar to the empery? Might first made kings, and laws were then most sure when, like the Dracos, they were writ in blood.
The Prince has been called the Tyrant's Handbook. Machiavelli's motive in writing it was entirely evil for those who hadn't read him. But what was his real motive?
His real motive was, in the Prince, to find a solution to the political problems of Italy. He wrote it in 1513. It was a time when Italy was being invaded at intervals by French armies, German armies, Spanish armies. And because the Italian peninsula was divided into so many independent small states, which Florence was one, he conceived the necessity for one great leader, by alliance and if necessary by conquest, to establish a block of territories sufficiently united and forced to obey that leader to produce armies that would repel what he called the barbarians as come beyond the Alps. To do this in a moment of emergency, and the whole book is instinct with the notion of meeting an emergency, he sees a ruler who must behave rather as a military ruler.
A prince, therefore, should have no other object or thought, nor acquire skill in anything except war, its organization and its discipline. It is unreasonable to expect that an armed man should obey one who is unarmed, or that an unarmed man should remain safe and secure when his servants are armed.
Military rulers do not tell the enemy what they're going to do. They prepare ambushes. Their job is to win at all costs. The politician in that situation is also under the obligation to win at all costs. This helped develop Machiavelli's idea that it was no good trying to be a nice, pious, ordinary person if you're dealing with a national emergency. And it was this particular cutting edge that persuaded him to write with such energy that his various remarks shine out of this text in a way that they would not have done had he been writing at greater leisure. This is not to say that Machiavelli did not believe that religion could get in the way of political behavior, but it was the particular circumstances, the time that he was writing and the urgency with which he was writing that made him become the eloquent pinner down of the nastier motives in man that cause such general revulsion.
The fact is that a man who wants to act virtuously in every way necessarily comes to grief among so many who are not virtuous. Therefore, if a prince wants to maintain his rule, he must learn not to be virtuous and to make use of this or not according to need.
Do you think the book maintains its ability to shock today, or at least to disturb?
I would have thought it did, but in a way, more now than for a couple of centuries. I think there's a growing nostalgia for a peacefulness today, a political life that does preserve the very values of a family, of friendships, a distrust of the machinations of politicians, a distrust of a statecraft that seems divorced from the way in which ordinary people would like to live and conduct their business amongst one another. Machiavelli is a really shocking reminder of how difficult it is for power, however benevolently intended, not to find itself separated from the values of everyday life.
Everyone realizes how praiseworthy it is for a prince to honor his word and to be straightforward, rather than crafty in his dealings. Nonetheless, contemporary experience shows that princes who have achieved great things have been those who have given their word lightly, who have known how to trick men with their cunning, and who, in the end, have overcome those abiding by honest principles.
That program was compiled and presented by Michael Diamond. The studio producer was Zena Roman. And you may like to know that Professor Sir John Hale, who spoke about Machiavelli's The Prince, will be presenting 5 programs about the Italian Renaissance later this year. You're tuned to London.